glasses. Am I the only one that has to carry those things around? There's certain things you put on your calendar, and you know, some of them, honestly, you don't really look forward to, and but you just got to do them on your to-do list or your calendar, however you keep yours. And then there's other things that it's okay. You don't get especially excited about it, but it, you know, it's okay. And then there's those things that you plan ahead. Maybe you put on your calendar that you really look forward to. Just kind of bring a smile inside when you see them, that you're going to be doing them in a few weeks or next month, whatever. Well, Pulaski's one of those things. They're in that third category of things that you look forward to doing. And for me, indeed, I do like coming up here and coming up a mountain, coming up 460 until I get to the top of the mountain, jump on the interstate and come. And listening to 60s music on XM radio. I hope that's legal before I teach a class, listening to 60s music. But first of all, while hasn't Wayne progressed from where he was, and we were praying so hard for him, and to now the last I've heard, maybe some of you may have an update that he did get to go home, and just for him to be able to sit there at his house and look at his land, look back there at that big deer stand he has behind his backyard in that right-of-way area, and just to be able to do that. And while when I pray a lot for someone or something, I like to make sure that I say prayers of thanks afterwards. And I know Wayne has, you know, with rehab and that kind of thing, that he has a ways to go. But look at where he was when we were so concerned, and where he is now. And I think, I feel like God heard our prayers for him. And Jackie, and you know how hard it must have been for her. Kay is not here. Let me give you an update on that. I think last time I was here, I mentioned Lisa, who had been attending, and they kind of connected there one Sunday, and so Lisa's been sitting with Kay. Well, Lisa went on a trip. I say a trip. She went back to West Virginia, where she's from. I think she still has relatives there, so she and Kay had probably not seen each other, I'd say, for more than 2 weeks, because Lisa's been gone a little bit. And Kay wanted to be there today when Lisa came back to Westside. So that will probably be the first time, I'd say, in at least a couple weeks, maybe three. But it's been a period of time where Lisa was gone. She's a lady who's been visiting. Kay has talked to Lisa about doing a Bible study, and hopefully that's going to happen soon now that Lisa is back in town from her trip. Kay and I last week did a little, kind of a 4 or 5 day quick trip. We left on Monday, came back Friday, and we went to Spruce Pine, North Carolina, first of all. We went to two different places. We left the mountains to go to the mountains. I guess that's how much we love mountains. But we went to Spruce Pine. And our final day there, Wednesday, we go to Spring Maid Resort and Campground area, a place we discovered. I think I saw that on one of my, I get outdoor emails, and I think I saw that on one of my outdoor emails and decided to try it. So that's probably, I'd say, at least the third time we've been there. We really like it, and such nice people, beautiful. I mean, they've got 5 fishing ponds on the grounds. So Kay and I fished. I basically take Kay with a little small pole, little bobber on it. I take the worms, a set of worms, set of night crawlers from Walmart. You can get them at Walmart. And so she's got a little bobber. I throw, she watches the bobber. When she sees it go under and stay under, she knows to start reeling. And so she does like touchless fishing. So basically she touches the reel and brings it in. Then I do everything, get the fish off, you know, and every now and then I say, hey, you want to throw it back in? No, I don't. So she watched me throw them back in. But that morning, Wednesday morning before we left, and this is a big campground retreat area, had a big field below the cabin we were at, and the emergency management services, I guess that's what you call them, because I saw a big pool trailer with emergency management. There was a crew of people there, and Black Hawk helicopters came in and landed. They were doing an exercise that morning, like a training exercise. So Kay got to go out on the back porch of the cabin we were on and watch those Black Hawks come in and land. Two of those, and it was a third one, a third helicopter. It was different. It may have been an Army helicopter as well. I'm not sure, but... So when I saw one of the guys walking below, and I asked him, you know, what are those helicopters? I thought they looked like Army helicopters. He said that they're Black Hawks. So that was really cool. And from there, we went to Irwin, Tennessee, another town in the mountains near Johnson City. The Appalachian Trail goes through there. And so we stayed, we've got a Airbnb, if you will, that we stay in. We've got to know these people, so we don't even go through Airbnb anymore. We just go pay them cash, carry in van. And so we stayed there a couple nights. Let me mention something that I've gotten a habit of doing. This is like a copy of our church building. But I get our church secretary each week to print, change the front. So normally there would be an article here. But I get her to put, visitors, welcome to Westside. What denomination is the Church of Christ? I've got a little write-up about that. Good question. We are not a denomination. If you check, and then I go on that. And then at the bottom is fire. Are there so many churches.com, the website. And as I came up here, I thought, there's a CD by Don Blackwell. Of course, that website is by Brother Blackwell. So I see you got cards and to hand people, hand out, as well as the CDs for that same website. But that's on there. Worship with us. What to expect on your first visit. I've got a little thing on there. Now, so we're going to... I left one at Spruce Pine, where we stayed. I left one at Irwin, where we stayed. And they're not coming. They're not going to be at Westside, right? But if they see that, oh, okay, visitor. They're not, what denomination is... I'm hoping that it will catch their eye enough to read it. And then the rest of the information... So they can look and say, okay, here's what that church does. Okay, they do community support day, and they see these names there, and hopefully it will draw their interest to look at this. Now, the tracks are great. We've got tracks, you've got tracks, they're great. But if I left a track there, I'm not sure if it would be as good a chance of them reading the track as looking at the bulletin. So that's kind of what I've been doing this for a long time. I've left these all over the place, I guess, on the eastern part of the country, some of the eastern states. But it's just a tool. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's necessarily converted anybody, but it's a seed planting tool. So just to let you know on that, I thought I'd mention that. And American Mission Campaign, I went last month. It was in Maryland. It's associated with Rob Whitaker. I guess y'all, I may have asked you this before. You know who Rob Whitaker? Okay, you may have. He and his family travel and do evangelism seminars, teaching congregations how to evangelize. So among doing that, and they travel all over the place doing these seminars. We've had him at Westside before, and we've been trying to implement some of the congregational evangelism, but Rob does about two campaigns a year, and so when I saw one of those was going to be in Waldorf, Maryland. Do you even know where that is? I didn't. I didn't even know where that was. I didn't know there was a Waldorf, Maryland. But it's up near Washington, near the Beltway. Now, what are the chances of us doing any good up near the Beltway going door to door? I mean, what are the... Well, we did. We did. I got to go door to door up there and other things. Those campaigns Rob does are not just all door to door. That's a small piece of it. But he gives you so much training and good information. And part of it was door to door. There was a group that came up from Freed Hardeman University. Yes, all the way from Henderson to Maryland. And I got to work with some of those kids, be around them. When I did door to door, I got paired up with one of the Freed girls, young ladies. And it was just so, so nice being with those kids. And I think this was a first for Rob to have a group from Freed like that at one of his campaigns. So he was going to see how it worked. And he just seemed delighted with what the kids were doing. And of course, there were adults too there. Not just from the congregation, from people who've come. Maybe they've done campaigns before and wanted to come to this one. But it was just great. So glad I did that. You know, it's just one of those things, should I do this? You know, I've got to travel here. It's going to be about. And then you decide to do it, and you're so glad. It was one of those things. Now, let me tell you, what I did, I journaled when I was on that campaign. I do that occasionally. I've journaled at Virginia Christian Camp before. And then I'll take my journals and they put them in the church bulletin. I think that may have been 2 years ago. I journaled when my boys were growing up. I've got 5 books of journal entries from when my boys were young until basically graduated from high school. And I kept journals. Kay would make an entry occasionally, but most of it was me. I just took it upon myself to do that. And anytime she wanted to make an entry, that was fine. But, you know, I just said, basically, she's got plenty to do besides. So I just took it upon myself. But what I did, my journal entry 1 is on the front of our bulletin from last week. This is my entry 1. And just to get a feel of what I've done here, Saturday, March 21st, 2026, Rob's family was at the registration table as I walked in the Waldorf Church of Christ building. Everything was laid out and organized. I left with a bag full of materials and a bright gold AMC, American Mission Campaign, t-shirt. As I entered the auditorium, I could hear and feel the energy. Laughter was coming from every direction. Happy Christians. Everything was super organized with Rob sending out numerous group texts before I ever got there. And so the journal goes on. So this was entry 1. Entry 2 was this week's bulletin. The front of this week's bulletin. And it was so long, Susan didn't have room to put it there. And we knew this. It was just going to be... So she made a... when she sent out the email, she had an attachment. So that's the rest of entry 2. And my final entry will be next Sunday's bulletin. But I'm telling you this because I've got laid out here. I got her to make extra copies. Here's entry one, entry two, and the attachment. And if any of y'all want to come and pick up one anytime today, I've got them laid out. I'm not going to take the extras back. Just leave them. If there's anything left over, just dispose of it. That's fine. I don't need them back. All right. I hope it was okay to take the time to tell you that. I just don't get to see you that often, and there's things I want to tell you. All right. As a review in the book of Ruth, as a review, as my Bible pages are falling out here, I think I'm about ready to get a new Bible, maybe. This one's got a lot of flaps on it, you know. And what we're going to do for our review of Ruth, you know, just when I'm up here occasionally, we only have so long, and so rather than spend a lot of review, I'm just going to read the verses that we've covered, which, do any of y'all remember what that is? Verses 1 through 7 so far. Yes, we've got 7 in 2 times, I think. So, I'm in chapter 1, verse 1. Now, it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled. That tells us when this happened. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab. He and his wife and 2 sons. They shouldn't be in Moab. Moab is not a good place to be. They worship Chemosh, I think is the name of the Moabite god. They don't need to be there. Moabite is basically an enemy of Israel. So why did they go there? Verse 2, the name of the man was Elimelech. The name of his wife was Naomi. Yes, that Naomi. And the names of his 2 sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to the country of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left, Naomi, and her 2 sons. And they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of one was Orpah, the other was Ruth. They dwelt there about 10 years. Then both boys die. Verse 5. So here you have this woman. Basically, her family has died off, and her livelihood, I suppose, has died off. Back then, in that time, it wasn't good to be a single woman. As far in terms of livelihood, in terms of general living. So they have this famine. Elimelech decides, hey, we're going to go over here where they've got food, and I don't know what the deal was there exactly, the whole details, but apparently he felt that they could survive better in Moab. Well, maybe physically, but it wasn't a good place to survive spiritually. Then 6, then she arose, Naomi, with her 2 daughter-in-laws, Orpah and Ruth, that she might return to the country of Moab, for she had heard the country of Moab, that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Okay, so she decides to go back. Her 2 daughter-in-laws are there. Therefore, she went out from the place where she was, her 2 daughter-in-laws with her. They went on the way to return to the land of Judah. So, apparently the famine's over back in Bethlehem, back in Israel where they came from. Naomi hears about it. She's going to leave Moab. They had gone there to survive the family. Now, I don't know what the other families in Bethlehem did. They must have survived it, I suppose. Don't you think Elimelech needed to have a little faith that God might take care of them? Again, I don't know all the details. So it's not good to be too judgmental. All right, this is where we're going to pick up in verse 8. That's our review, verse 8. And Naomi said to her two daughter-in-laws, "Go return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. And the Lord grant," verse 9, "that you may find rest each in the house of her husband." So she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices, the three ladies now, the three ladies, and wept together. So she tells those two ladies, Orpah and Ruth, her daughter-in-laws, maybe tears streaming down her face as she tells them. Maybe she's crying. She's telling them to go back, go home. "This is our turning point. You need to go on back. I'm going to go back to my people. Go home. You've been good to my good wives to my sons." I could hear her saying that. That's not in the text, but I think we can imagine her saying that. "Go get a new wife. May the Lord deal kindly with you." And so we see, could you picture seeing these three ladies together, maybe facing each other in a circle, maybe they have their arms around each other, sobbing out loud as Naomi tells them goodbye. "It's time for you to go home." I'm glad Naomi invoked the name of her Lord. "The Lord deal kindly with you." I believe she had spoken of him many times to those two young ladies, Ruth and Orpah. So even though she was in Moab, she did not recognize that false god of Moab, Chemosh. Apparently she wasn't worried about being considered intolerant and if it meant compromise. All right, any thoughts on this, what we've led up to and where we are now? Any thoughts that you might have on this? Verse 10, "And they said to her, 'Surely we will return with you to your people.'" Wow. That's something that they would say that, isn't it? "But Naomi said, 'Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands?'" We'll come back to that. "Turn back, my daughters," verse 12. "Go, for I'm too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband tonight, if I should get married today, this very day, and should bear sons, 13, would you wait for them until they're grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." And referring to what's happened, the death of her husband, the death of her two sons. What she was talking about there, I'm assuming, is that Levirate law. I guess Orpah and Ruth may have been familiar with some of these laws and customs of the Jews, of Israel, regarding marriage and death of a husband. Maybe Naomi had told the two ladies about this law since their both husbands died. So she tells them in so many words, "Even if I had a husband, which I don't, and bore sons, would you wait for them to reach maturity? Would you put your lives on pause for while they're growing up?" And I think that level of the law, just let me give you a quick coach version, is that if the son died, had a brother or brothers, the brother would be obligated to marry the widow and raise up children to keep the name of the deceased husband. levirate law. Sometimes we may, I don't know if it's called that in the scripture or not, but we hear that term. But that's my understanding of it. At the end of verse 13, Naomi says this, and listen to this term, "The hand of the Lord has gone out against me." What a tragic statement. Have you ever felt that way? That you would say that, "The hand of the Lord has gone out against me." I know you felt worry and pain and hurt before, but to say, "The hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Wow, that's a hard statement, isn't it? You wonder if Naomi at this point was suffering maybe from some degree of depression, maybe, at least some degree. I mean, she had lost basically her whole life and livelihood. And she says this. You know, when we get to this point, or when someone gets to this point, basically they're dwelling in hopelessness. What's the very opposite of hopelessness? Think about it. Hopelessness, the very opposite. Hope and faith. Yes, hope and faith. So that's where we as Christians should be dwelling the best we can, even in hard times, in faith, in hope. Yes, yes. And I think about it, how different Naomi, and I know it's a total different situation for her, but how different her reaction than, let's say, Job. You know, all the tragedy he had, that old scarred warrior of faith. In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong throughout all that time when he was going through what he did. Job would later say this, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." That's Job 1:22. How about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? You remember those three young men? Nebuchadnezzar, they're right before him, having refused to bow to the image. It may have been of Nebuchadnezzar himself. I don't know if it says specifically, but, and he's basically reading them the riot act. "You're lucky I didn't have you killed on the spot when you would not bow. I'm giving you one last chance, guys. You worship the image or burn in the furnace." And then he adds, maybe with a little bit of arrogance, "And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" And we kind of think, just wait and see. You'll see. How about their response? They didn't know what was going to happen, did they? Did they cower in fear? No, they did not. "Our God whom we serve is able to deliver us. But if not, let us make this clear, Nebuchadnezzar, even if we go to the furnace, we will not worship the golden image." Yeah. Okay, now let's move to 14. We want to try to get through some of these verses today. "Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, these three ladies." Don't you suppose it was probably a loud, overt cry as they were together there? Orpah kissed her mother-in-law. Goodbye kiss, I guess, at that point. But Ruth clung to her. And then 15, and she said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back." Naomi said, "Your sister-in-law has gone back to her people, to her gods," little g. "Return after your sister-in-law." So Orpah goes ahead and says goodbye, kisses her mother-in-law. gives her goodbyes, heads back to Moab, to her family, her people, I assume. Look, Ruth, look, Orpah's going back. This is breaking my heart, but you've got to go with her. Then Ruth looks at Naomi and utters one of the most magnificent declarations of loyalty to be found in any literature. 16, entreat me not to leave you, to turn back from following after you. Wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. And look at the first part of 17. Where you die, I will die. And there will I be buried. That's coming from Ruth to Naomi. And I may have mentioned before, in the start of our study or near the start, that you may have heard that at a wedding, maybe your wedding. And of course, it's from a woman to a woman, from an older lady, the mother-in-law, to a daughter-in-law. But that declaration of loyalty, don't you think it's nice to hear that anytime, be it a wedding or some other situation, where you would say words like that. And indeed, that shows us what a special lady Ruth was. As Robert Hubbard said, these words tower as a majestic monument of faithfulness. Faithfulness. Remember the hopelessness, faithfulness. Opposite. Of significance, according to the interpreter's Bible, and I wouldn't have known this unless, you know, I was reading commentary or studying, that Ruth does not say Elohim for God as foreigners do, but Jehovah, indicating that Ruth is a follower of the one true God. So, Ruth apparently, from what I'm reading, invokes the name Jehovah. And in this commentary says that would indicate that she's a follower of Jehovah at this point. Mother-in-laws, do you think you can have any impact upon your daughter-in-laws? Well, apparently Naomi did. And I know about the family deal. It's hard in families sometimes. I know. But just pointing that out. Verse 18 tells us that Naomi saw at that point that Ruth was determined to go with her to Judah. I guess at some point she just saw there's no, you know, I said what I can say. She's coming with me no matter what I say. And indeed, she was going with Naomi, and indeed, she did go. You know, Ruth honored this vow of declaration that she made there. It wasn't just empty words. She honored it. She lived it. She showed it. At the very time, Naomi felt God was against her, He was preparing wonderful things for her life during that time, wouldn't he? And Ruth is a major player in those wonderful things that will happen. It's been said there's spaces between our fingers so that another person's fingers can feel them. Yes, that was Ruth. That was Ruth, right there. Okay, let me give what I like to do from time to time in this study of Ruth is stop and make some application thoughts. So from what we just talked about, these verses, let's make this application. Number one, a faithful friend is loyal in bad times as well as good times. Over the years, Naomi and Ruth must have spent many happy hours together. Close friendship developed. The true test of friendship is how we react when adversity comes. Ruth was not just a fair-weather friend, but was there when Naomi needed her the most. Application point two. A faithful friend focuses on the needs of others. Naomi wasn't the only grieving widow. Ruth had lost her husband, had never had a child. What hope did she have at this point of having a child? But she focused on her mother-in-law and not on herself. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A close friend, a brother or sister. Proverbs 17:17. Paul told the Philippian brethren, let each of us look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. That's Philippians 2, verse number 4. In life, you've got givers and takers. You know that, don't you? You can probably think of work, even if you're retired, of when you were working. I bet there was givers and takers in that workplace. Among your own friends and neighbors, you probably got givers and takers. Maybe in your own family and extended family, as you look at them, givers and takers, you probably got some of both. Don't you love those givers? Don't you love them? Business leader Bob Mowat said this, help others get ahead. You always stand taller when with someone else on your shoulders. And then application number three. Faithful friendship gives us what we need, not always what we want. Naomi wanted Ruth to go back home. Instead, she stayed and gave her what she needed. A traveling companion, a caregiver, a moral supporter. Sometimes friends may need to give us correction. By speaking the truth in love, we can give constructive criticism without destroying a friendship. And that by speaking the truth in love, that's Ephesians 4:15, in case any of you are writing down the scriptures. Solomon said this, the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. That's Proverbs 27, verse 9. Mark, I guess we're getting near the end of class. Let me finish up with just one personal story. And that'll get us up to verse 18. Will it not? Good, good. I still remember this. All these years ago, I was a freshman at Freed Hardeman. Let's see, it was second semester. So I guess I would have turned 19 in January. In the dorm room, other guys, you know, hanging out in the dorm room. And so I decided to make fun of someone else on campus. It was another student. And I decided to say something to make fun of them. And this particular person was someone you could probably easily make fun of. I don't know why I did that. It was dumb. You know, big shot 19-year-old, I guess, running their mouth. There was a young man in that room, Mark Carnes. That was the other young man. Mark was a wonderful person. If I remember correctly, he eventually became a doctor and did medical mission work. I didn't stay in real close contact with him, but from what I remember, I'd heard that that's what he did. And so I was making fun of that other kid. Mark speaks up, and he said these words. Now, they were so impactful, I still remember them today, and I don't know if they were the exact words, but he just spoke up and said, "I don't appreciate that." I think that's all he said. I don't know if he said anything besides that. And I think it was just like, if he had taken a 2x4 and hit me on the back of the head, I don't know if it would have gotten my attention any more than that. And I tell you, that did not sever my friendship with Mark. I still, at that point, realized what a good guy he was. But I think I needed to hear that. I don't know if anybody else in the room would have said that. But for Mark, it probably kind of hurt him to hear me say that about another student. And he just makes a simple statement. And you know, it was impactful for me. I still remember it. And sometimes, maybe just a one-sentence feeling statement to someone that you just need to speak up and say it. Are they going to get mad at us for expressing our feelings? Not pointing fingers. Why would you say that? You know that's wrong. That's not what Mark said to me. I don't appreciate that. He's just telling me how he felt. Was I going to get mad at his feelings? But anyway, that's my story. I think we can do that at times with friends. You know, our job is not to go around and police our friends. But there may be times, if it's a close friend, we just need to speak up. Hardy counsel. A wise man once said that, didn't he? Hardy counsel. Okay. I hope I can come back before too long and pick up again here where we are. And Janet, I'll try to write on my little sticky note here where to pick up next time.